Suddenly, the freighter formation opened up, and 8 snub fighters, led by 4 Z-95 headhunters, burst up through the opening at full attack speed. Corrin dropped his crosshairs on one of the speeding headhunters and hit his trigger. The quad burst of laser fire pierced the headhunter's shield, then sheared off the wing. The ship whirled off in a flat spin. Evening his shield out, Corrin dove onto the tail of another set of Tycheran fighters. The group consisted of 2 TIE fighters and 2 Uglies, the hybrid ships with TIE ball cockpits married to Y-wing engine nacelles. Corrin kept an eye on the TIE fighters as Ural went after the Uglies. Though the Gan's exoskeleton made him look clumsy on the ground, his handling of the X-wing was fluid and delicate. Ural triggered a double burst of laser fire, sending 2 scarlet bolts lancing through the lead TIE's ball cockpit. The TIE fighter hurtled through space. Ural sideslipped the second ship, and before he could begin to maneuver, fired 2 laser bursts at it. The engine ripped free, rocketing off toward Shorax's sun, while the ball flew out of control. Corrin keyed his comm unit. We have 1 bad guy extra vehicular. Good flying, Ural.
10 copies.
Corrin pulled back on the stick. Any other pilot in the unit would have been ecstatic, but not Ural. The only way to judge his emotions was to listen to how he referred to himself. Gans felt it the height of arrogance to speak of themselves with a personal pronoun, unless the Gans leadership had determined that they had done something so great that every Gans would be aware of who was being referred to. As a result, when Ural was happy, he referred to himself as Ural. When he was chagrined, as Quirg. And when he was really mortified, as Gan, allowing himself to sink even further into anonymity. Corrin brought his ship around and saw 2 of the freighters hanging in space with fires raging internally. Order, sir? Tycho replied,
Wedge has convinced the convoy that once it makes delivery runs for us, it can go free. Form up with Oro and take 2 tankers for your run. They'll slave their navicomps to yours. Once the cargo has been delivered, let them go and get back to base.
A cloud of steam rolled toward Corrin as the inner door of the thermal lock opened. He and Oro stepped through quickly, anxious to escape the frigid conditions in Hallinet's hangar. Corrin pulled off his gloves, blew some warmth into his hands, then smiled at a small, balding man approaching him. You must be Farl Kort. The man extended a hand.
I am. I want to thank you for your mission here. When we put the word out, I had no reason to expect, such a generous response so quickly.
Pleased to meet you, sir. Hallinet was a moon orbiting a gas giant. A thick coat of ice covered the planet, but beneath the frozen crust, the hot heart of the world heated water and rock enough to make life sustainable. The colonists had weathered the Empire and Rebellion all but unnoticed, since the planet produced nothing of use except for their ichthyculture, farms of fish favored by gourmets. The inhabitants numbered just over 10,000. Hallinet was merely 1 more curiosity in a galaxy full of them, and would have escaped Corrin's notice, except for an urgent message sent to Coruscant requesting shipments of Bacta. Farl led them from the tunnel to the edge of a huge chasm. 100 meters above them, a double-walled, transparasteel shield capped the chasm, diffusing the light glowing down through the glacier. On both sides of the chasm, lights shone through viewports carved in the stone and silhouetted bridges that crossed the chasm. Corrin turned to Farl and praised the beauty of the place, then said, Tell me more about the disease that's causing you problems.
The symptoms are congestion, coughing, fatigue, body aches, and a ravenous appetite. Bathing in the mineral springs here seems to help, but a Bacta bath will be far more helpful. This virus mutates so quickly that we can't create a vaccine. What do we owe you for this Bacta? The market value for it is something in excess of 1 billion Imperial credits.
Corrin glanced over at Ural, then shook his head. You don't owe us anything. Farl looked puzzled.
But you must have paid a great deal for it.
The Gan leaned forward.
Ural believed Corrin would tell you that the Bacta was collected as part of a bad debt. It cost Corrin and Ural nothing. Therefore, is offered freely. I see,
Carl said. Corin smiled. You needn't think of it as stolen, since the government that would have demanded payment from you is not legitimate.
But we've always given something in exchange for what we take.
Corin looked at Uro. I've heard that the fish you raise here are considered delicacies on some worlds. And you mentioned that you have mineral springs. Uro, flying in here, didn't I tell you I'd give half a billion credits for a hot bath and a good fish dinner? The Gans nodded extravagantly.
Indeed, Quirk remembers you're using those very words. And Quirk concurs.
Wedge stood up behind his desk as Booster Terek's bulky form filled the doorway to the station manager's office. I appreciate your coming here so quickly, Booster. I know you wanted to spend some time with Mirax before she heads out. The older man shrugged.
She's helping prep this Horn for his part in the mission.
Booster plopped himself down in a chair.
I think she took up with him to annoy me.
Wedge laughed and sat back down. I'm sure it does seem like that, but I think there's a lot more there. I'll get right to the point, Booster. I wanted to offer you the chance to pilot the Mimban Cloudrider on the run to Typhara. The Mimban Cloudrider was one of the Typharan tankers. Wedge had pulled the crew from it and, with Booster's help, had gotten identification files spliced together that listed Mirax, Corin, Elfko, Sixus, and Ayella Wasiri under various pseudonyms as the crew. Once in orbit at Typhara, they could make planetfall in a shuttle and hook up with the Ashern. Wedge needed someone to command the mission, and thought Booster would be invaluable because of his experience and instinct.
Booster shook his head. Now, the Cloud Rider is too small. Too little to do. 5 years in the spice mines on Kessel changed me, Wedge. Pain, I could fight against, but boredom, that was the enemy. Now I travel and do deals for friends because it means I'm constantly meeting folks. I'm trying to fill the void that Kessel left in me. And piloting Cloud Rider isn't going to do that.
A smile slowly grew on Booster's face.
I have an idea that might serve both of us.
What do you have in mind?
Let me run this station.
What?
Look, you're occupying this station, which has been a trade staple in this region for a very long time. You've got the Republic thinking it's been destroyed, but ships that come in system to make navigational adjustments can still see it. You're fooling no one. And the fact that you've shut the station down to folks who have been here a lot means you're making them angry. That in turn means that someone is going to sell you out to Isart.
Wedge nodded. We figured that.
But you should also figure this. Pretty soon, no one is going to want to trade with Typhara. You're giving away what Boru wants to charge for. His only recourse is to cut off Bacta going to folks who supply you. Once he does that, you're dead.
Booster pressed his hands together.
On the other hand, if we open this station to trade, we start generating capital for this operation, and we have people bringing us information and equipment. We develop suppliers who are in our debt because of the station, which means they won't want to betray you.
And running the station would mean you'd be anything but bored.
There's that, too.
Wedge thought for a moment. Then he stood and stepped away from the station manager's chair.
Booster Terek, this station is all yours. May the Force be with you.
The shuttle ride down to Typhara, where the rogues were planning to work with the rebel Ashern group of Vratix, left Corin uneasy. The rising storm caused turbulence, and being strapped into a seat in the back made Corin want to scream. He had managed to get in a little practice with his lightsaber in the ship's galley, but he still felt far from confident using it. Before reading the Jedi material Luke Skywalker had given him, Corin would have put the dread in his belly down to a reaction to the bumpy ride. Now he wondered if he weren't anticipating some disaster through the Force. The view screens on the interior of the shuttle's cabin showed a heavily forested landscape, punctuated by inorganic stone and transparent steel towers.
Mirax indicated one particularly blobby building.
I bet she lived there.
Corin knew it was Erisi Flores, to whom Mirax referred. It was Erisi, one of Rogue Squadron's own pilots, who had given him up to Isar. Jealous that Corin preferred Mirax, she had also engineered the destruction of the Bacta convoy at Alderaan in order to kill Mirax. The main building of the Titan spaceport was long and low, with growing trees inside it and decorative elements which suggested that the insectoid Rapix had created the place. Across the way, Corin and Mirax saw Elko, Sixtus, and Aiella. Their Ashern contact was supposed to meet them here, but no one appeared to be paying them any attention. Corin and Mirax found seats in a waiting area. Corin was walking up to the refresher station when its door opened and a stormtrooper came out. Corin felt a heavy hand on his shoulder.
I know you. Identification card.
Corin's mind reeled. It had to be impossible for the stormtrooper to actually know him. Then he realized the man might have seen him on the Lusantia. The stormtrooper examined the ID that showed Corin to be Eamon Izali, a ship's mechanic.
It seems fine, but you look familiar. Come with me so I can check you out.
Fighting panic, Corin flashed on one of the Jedi stories he'd recently read. He stared intently into the black recesses of the helmet. I don't need to go with you.
You don't need to go with me.
Corin grinned. Hey, it's working, he thought. I'm influencing his mind. I can go about my business, he said.
You can go about your business?
The stormtrooper grabbed Corin's jumpsuit front.
Your business is my business, void brain.
The stormtrooper's comlink clicked from inside the helmet.
This is 915, bringing one in.
Quickly, Corin reached for the lightsaber disguised as a hydro spanner at his waist and thumbed it on. The silvery blade swept up through the muzzle of the blaster carbine. The weapon's barrel fell one way and the stormtrooper's left hand another. As Corin brought the lightsaber around at the stormtrooper's eye, the blade burned through the helmet, filling the air with a pungent scent of melted armor and burned flesh. The stormtrooper collapsed. Someone in the spaceport screamed, then two more stormtroopers came running. Two others ran in the entrance closest to Sixtus and Elskol. Elskol pulled a blaster from her bag and shot at one of them. He went down, and suddenly the whole building erupted with blaster fire as stormtroopers appeared on the elevated walkways at the ends of the building. Corin dove into the row of chairs in the waiting area and pitched them over backwards. Mirax went with them and hunkered down beside him. She brandished the smoking ruin of the stormtrooper's blaster carbine.
I appreciate the rescue, but did you have to destroy his blaster?
Can't parry the bolt, so I just parry the weapon. Corin ducked as crossfire from the far walkway nibbled away at the chairs. He leaned over and kissed Mirax full on the mouth.
Stay here. I have an idea.
Lightsaber in hand, Corin ran low and fast toward the refresher station. He hit the door hard and cut inside as blaster bolts shattered tiles and burned through the Duraplast door. He kicked open the door to one of the stalls, hopped up on the commode, and climbed up on the edge of the Durasteel partitions. He stabbed the lightsaber up through the ceiling and made three quick cuts. A triangular section of ceiling crashed down. Corin worked his way farther along the partition, then boosted himself up into the second floor refresher station. He ripped open the refresher station's door and stepped onto the elevated walkway. One step out, he brought the lightsaber around in a waist-high cut that caught the first stormtrooper in the back. He pitched forward, then rebounded off the guardrail, but Corin had already moved past him. In a continuation of the move that had taken the first man, Corin raised the lightsaber and used a backhanded cut to decapitate a second trooper. That blow was a mistake. It popped the man's head off, but it also took Corin's arm too far back. Sliding toward the next stormtrooper in line, the third of the four he faced, he wasted a second move, bringing the lightsaber back into striking position. He tried a high, two-handed cut, but the imp had already begun to turn toward the attack and ducked it. The stormtrooper lunged at Corin, catching him with a shoulder in the ribs. Corin was driven back to the ferrocrete wall. The lightsaber fell from his hand as the imp drove him again into the wall, crushing his chest. The stormtrooper withdrew. Corrin kicked off the wall and knocked his foe into the guardrail. Launching himself at the man's head, Corrin grabbed and held on as the metal rail shrieked and bent. Both men whirled off the elevated walkway. Corrin hit hard, his back slamming into the body of the first stormtrooper he killed. His rear end hit the ferrocrete floor, sending a jolt of pain up his spine. With his lungs burning for lack of air, he found himself looking straight up into the muzzle of the remaining stormtrooper's blaster. Unable to do anything but cough, Corrin closed his eyes and prepared to die. He heard the whine of a blaster being fired, then felt a hammer blow to his chest. It didn't hurt the way a blaster bolt hurt, but he knew he'd been hit. He willed his eyes open and would have laughed if he could have. Standing over him, he saw Bror Jace, a Typhoran native and member of Rogue Squadron the imps had killed well before Coruscant had fallen. As his consciousness faded, Corrin knew there was only one explanation for what he saw. "I am dying," he realized, "because only the dead can see the dead." Corrin had no way of knowing how long he'd been in the bacta tank. The pain in his back and guts had been overwhelming at first, but it subsided after a while. Harder to heal was his recognition of his arrogance. "I am not a Jedi," he thought. Trying to use Jedi methods without proper training was stupid. A gentle tug on his breathing mask caused Corrin to look up at the medtech standing over him. Corrin made his way to the surface of the tank, removed the breathing mask, and hauled himself out through the hatch. "How do you feel?" the tech asked as he showered him down. Corrin shrugged and wiped his face. "Pretty good. I was in for, what, a week?" "2 days. You are used to dealing with export quality bacta. This was made by Zaltin Varachin, and it's more potent." He handed Corrin a towel. "If you will follow me, your friends are waiting for you." Mirax enfolded him in a hug as soon as she saw him.
"I was afraid you wouldn't make it," she said. "I managed to recover your lightsaber for you."
Corrin was reading Aiella Elskol and Sixthus when the man who had saved his life came through the archway. Corrin's jaw dropped open.
"You are Bror Jace."
"Indeed I am."
Jace graciously waved Corrin toward one of the daybeds.
"You'd like an explanation of why I'm not dead?"
Corrin sniffed. "I've been reported dead myself. These things happen." Mirax slapped him playfully on the belly.
"You're dying to know what happened to him, just like the rest of us."
Bror began to pace.
"As you may recall, my family are owners of the Zaltin Corporation. The intention behind my joining the squadron was so that I could gain the trust of the New Republic. Zaltin officials had come to the conclusion that the Empire was doomed, and we wanted to come to an agreement with the New Republic to provide bacta along the lines of the system that existed before the cartel was created by the Empire. Also, since bacta production is all but impossible without the Vratix, Zaltin began to court them, supplying money and hiding places. The Asher required me to return to Tythera to join their main planning group. When Irisi asked about my itinerary, I told her, because I wanted her people who owned Zufra watching for my return. On my trip, I transferred from my X-Wing to a freighter that brought me back here. We placed a bomb in my X-Wing meant to mimic the accidental discharge of a proton torpedo. We intended to enter the system from quite a distance out, send the X-Wing in, then have it blow up where everyone could see it. Corrin scratched at his upper lip. "But the imps had an interdictor cruiser waiting for your X-Wing, thanks to Arisi." Jace nodded. "At that point, I had gone underground, so it didn't really matter how I died, as much as it mattered that both the New Republic and Zukfra thought I was dead." Elsko folded her arm.
"Corrin, we want to fill you in on what we've been talking about since you've been in the tank. Sixtus Aiella and I will be staying here on Typhida, taking Jace's place in the Ashen Planning Council, because he will be going back with you to liaise with the squadron."
Wedge grinned as his X-Wing hurtled through hyperspace. Information Brewer Jace had brought back set the basis for the run the squadron was now headed out on. Jace had found out that after the rogue raids, Isard had initiated escort service for the Baxter convoy, moving them to centralized locations where client worlds would have to come to get their shipments. The Ashern had sliced new code into the Navicomps on three freighters that would produce a course deviation in the final leg of their trip. The freighters would fly out from under their cover and be in a position for the squadron to make off with them. Wedge knew that the freighters he'd be meeting were from a small convoy that was being watched over by the Victory II-class Star Destroyer Corruptor, led by Captain 8 Convarian. Convarian was supposed to have served both at Dera 4 and Hoth before being given the Corruptor and sent off on campaigns of terror against populated worlds on the Outer Rim. He was rumored to be cruel, with a penchant for quick action. Wedge's snub fighter reverted to real space in a system with a red dwarf star surrounded by a dust disk. Three Bacta freighters hung in space just above the plane of the disk. Wedge opened a comm channel.
One and two squadrons, escort in attack position.
Backing him up were the X-Wings and the newest ships Wedge had acquired in a recent deal with the Twi'lek. The Chirdax, or Death Steeds, were named after a parasitic fungus that invades a larger creature and destroys it. A new Twi'lek pilot, Taldira, had also joined the squadron. Wedge then shifted the comm unit over to the frequency the Tytherans used.
This is Wedge Antilles. I have two squadrons of fighters here. We intend to have your cargo. If you cooperate, you will go back home unharmed.
One of the tankers began to move away from the others. Minok, Wedge's R5 droid, tagged it Sukhra Rose.
This is Bors Killam in the Rose. We're yours, Antilles.
Stand by, Rose.
Wedge shifted his comm unit over to the squadron's tactical frequency and ordered Corrin Urul and two Twi'lek ships to escort the Rose to Hallanit. Wedge looked back at his monitor again. The remaining ships were Zufra Alazi and Zufra Meander. Since Alazi was a key component in Basta, Wedge assumed that captain had seniority over the other ship.
Meander, what is your decision?
Meander began to surrender. And as it did, the Alazi brought its turbo lasers to bear on the defecting ship. Wedge ordered Gavin and Shiel to neutralize Alazi, and they sprinted in. He shifted back to the Tytherin frequency.
Be advised, Alazi, that the same software that allowed us to bring you here will, when the signal is sent, purge your ship of atmosphere and slave itself to our Navicomp data. Your choice is not whether you come with us or not, but whether you do so alive or dead.
He let that sink in, praying they wouldn't call his bluff.
You'll help our families. I thought Kitchy would kill them all if we defected.
You have my word on it.
Silence fell for several heartbeats. Then the Alazi's captain spoke.
Alazi is yours.
As the Alazi came about to starboard and began its run up to light speed, a huge white dagger thrust through the fabric of space on a course that cut in at the freighter's line of flight. Dread bubbled into Wedge's throat as the Corruptor reverted to real space and opened up with its weaponry. A second volley of fire from the Star Destroyer focused on the Bacta tanker. In an instant, the entire ship glowed orange. Then the storage tanks exploded one after another. The superheated Bacta sprayed out and instantly congealed into sheets of ice. Nothing remained of the Alazi. There was no word from Riv Shiel or Gavin. Amid the sound of 1,000 individuals stamping their heels and coming to attention, Fleury Voru followed Isine Isard out of the belly of the shuttle into the Corruptor's hold. Voru looked out over the ranks of sailors and stormtroopers and allowed himself a smile. Captain Convarian, whose sharp features, thick black hair, and blue eyes conveyed a surprising intensity, met Fleury Voru's offered hand with a strong grip.
"Pleased to meet you, Captain Convarian,"
said Voru.
Convarian nodded briskly. "And you, Minister Voru, I am honored that you would deign to notice my ship's exploits."
Isard, wearing her Scarlet Admiral's uniform, looked at him with faint amusement in her eyes.
You have shown initiative, Commander. And I always notice initiative. I should like to inspect your ship if that is possible, but first I would speak with you in private.
By sending the Corruptor after the errant ship, Convarian had succeeded in ambushing an Antilles operation and scattering his forces. By Convarian's estimate, Antilles had lost a half dozen ships. On the other hand, Antilles had still gotten away with two ships, and Convarian had destroyed a Bacta freighter on his own initiative.
Isard stared at Convarian. Your discovery of the deception concerning the freighters was impressive, Commander.
Thank you. But it was no more than should be expected from any of our personnel.
Isard's eyes narrowed. Analysis of your ship's data record shows your gunners opened fire 3 seconds after reversion. A signal went out to Alavi 5 seconds after reversion, and the volley of shots that destroyed Alavi came 8 seconds after reversion. You chose to shoot regardless of their response.
Convarian's face constricted. Because Alavi was surrounded by hostile snub fighters and was moving in conjunction with them, I had to assume it was under their control. I was aware of your policy of punishing collaborators, and I chose to implement it immediately.
So, you chose to implement a policy without asking my permission?
Convarian nodded. I did.
And you are prepared to take full responsibility for doing so?
I am.
Then you will execute the families of those crewmen on the Alavi.
Color drained from Convarian's face. If that is your wish. But Isard was only testing him.
That situation has been dealt with already and doesn't need your attention. I have another task for you. Minister Voreau, your briefing.
Voreau explained that Antilles' crew had given Bacta away to several worlds, damaging profits as well as Isard's reputation.
You will select one of those worlds and retake our Bacta.
Convarian listened carefully. And if there is no Bacta to recover?
I saw it straightened up. If the Bacta is used up, it will have granted them help. You will take it back again.
Convarian nodded. It will be done.
Waru raised a hand.
Not so quickly, Captain.
There are caveats. First and foremost, you will be taking along with you 2 companies of the Typhon Home Defense Corps. We want the Typhons to see the crimes of these worlds as crimes against them, not against Director Isard. We want them to get their hands dirty. If they are acting with us, they become complicit in our activities. By making them administer the punishment to these worlds, we give them an even greater stake in seeing that we remain here to help defend them. And we give them a reason to defend themselves.
Convarian's eyes narrowed.
You sound as if you truly think Antilles and his rabble can topple you.
Nonsense!
Isard waved her hand dismissively.
There will come a point, however, when the new Republic considers what it is going to do about our control of the Bacta supply. They have refrained from causing trouble so far because they are reluctant to dabble in the internal politics of worlds. Warlord Zinge has further distracted them. But once he has been dealt with, they will again consider us.
Convarian nodded. And if the Typherins back us, the New Republic would have to stage an invasion of Typhara to oust us.
Precisely.
Commander Aristide Larrett's TIE interceptor dropped from the belly of the Corruptor and let gravity seduce it down into Halinit's atmosphere. From the moment Isard had appointed her to lead the Typhon Home Defense Corps Aerospace Wing, Erisi had lobbied hard to equip her 2 THDC squadrons with X-Wings. She had been a rogue squadron pilot herself, and she knew that although the X-Wing was slightly less agile than the Interceptor, its shields and use of both proton torpedoes and lasers made it a superior fighter. But Isard had refused, And Arisi knew it was because she needed to see anything and everything Imperial as better than anything the Alliance had to oppose it. Arisi really couldn't blame Isard for treating the Typherins and the THDC as the Empire's stupid cousin. The Corruptor was just en route to Halanit when word came that there had been an Ashran raid on Typhara. Arisi's cheeks burned as she remembered the image of her father, one of the generals in the THDC, slumped in his chair. He had been stunned with a blaster, then his uniform had been stolen, and hollows of him naked had been taken. Her father had been one of Zulfra's most ardent advocates, and by humiliating him, the Ashran had rocked Zulfran society to its foundation. Even worse for Arisi was her discovery that the Yellow Isiri had been identified as one of the perpetrators. The imps took that as a sign that Antilles had entered into a full alliance with the Ashran. But Arisi was sure Aiello wanted to get back at her for her betrayal of Corin and the rest of the rogues. Below her, the bombers began their runs on Halanit. The high-yield proton bomb shattered Halanit's transparacial shield. The warm air from beneath the shield rushed upward, blowing debris out. Around the hole's jagged edges, cold air poured down into the colony. Arisi knew that with the canopy breached and the ichthyculture pools transformed into giant stew pots, the Halanit colony was dead. Those who didn't freeze to death would starve. She felt no remorse. Now she had shown Convarian that THDC pilots were not the incompetent nerf brain he thought they were. The feeling in Corin's gut was as cold as Wedge's narration of the holographic imaging from Gavin's X-Wing. He had been rescued by the Halanit after being shot while trying to neutralize the Alazi. They had healed him with the Bacta the squadron had brought them, and he was about to return to Yagdor when the THDC attack came. Gavin had leapt into his X-Wing and done as much damage to the Typherins as he could before returning to base. Corin shivered and felt Mirax gently rub her hand along his spine. He had prepared himself for losing friends in the squadron. He had been able to tell himself that Riv Shiel had died well in combat, just as he would have wanted to go. The people of Halanit, however, Corin thought, shaking his head. It was assumed that no one in the colony was left living. The glow panels in the small briefing room came up.
She has to pay.
Gavin hammered his fist on the arm of his chair.
Isart and Arisi and all of them have to pay.
And pay they will. There was determination in Wedge's voice. Typhara has dozens of small Bacta-producing colonies. We're going to pick one and destroy it. When they were dismissed, Mirax and Corin went to one of the tapcasts and sat in a private booth. Mirax sighed. The rogues are good, but I think you've all underestimated your opposition. Captain Convarian is very aggressive. The captain of the Star Destroyer Avarice, Sir Yonka, is smart. He cares what the odds are and does everything he can to maximize his chances of survival. The virulence's Joab Drisso is a stalwart Imperial. My father thinks he'll move over to take command of the Sankhya. Drisso's executive officer is Captain Lakwivasha, so she'll be moved up in his place. A serving droid put tumblers of Corellian whiskey in front of them, accompanied with steaming noodles and thin-sliced vegetables drenched in a green sauce. Corin speared something crunchy with his fork and popped it into his mouth. The sauce was a bit hot, but it was flavorful, and it cleared his sinuses, so he decided against complaining. He looked up as Uro entered with three other Gans and made his way through the jumble of diners. Uro stopped at the edge of Corin's table.
Greetings, Corin and Mirax. It is Quirk's honor to present to you three Gans from Quirk's homeworld of Gan.
Mirax smiled.
We're honored to meet friends of Uro. He's Gans. Are not Quirk's friends. They are Ruud Sabi, something like observers or examiners, but more than either.
The taller Gan spoke.
We have been sent by the elders of Gan to watch Uro Quirk. We are to chronicle Quirk's existence and to criticize it. It is a great honor.
After they left, Mirax raised an eyebrow.
What was all that about?
Not a clue. The Twi'leks have joined us, and now we have some Gans. I just hope Iceheart gets as confused as I am. 2 weeks later, Wedge led an attack against the Bacta refinement plant at the tropical world of Kratu 5. The new Gan Druid Savvy accompanied him in heavily modified Thai bombers and helped fight the Typhon Home Defense Corps pilot. But the THDC pilots were amateurs and the rogues got away clear. Meanwhile, Booster continued to wheel and deal to get weapons, ships, and supplies at the space station at Yagdul. Mirax Terek gave the rakishly good-looking man a dazzling smile as she stepped into his office, which was located deep in a hollow asteroid.
Talon Card, pleased to meet you again. I don't know if you'll remember me.
Card's pale blue eyes sparkled.
I can hardly forget you, Mirax Terek. Because of your efforts, those cases of Alderaanian wine cost me well more than I had expected to pay.
He took her hand and gently kissed it, his black mustache and goatee tickling her fingers.
Mirax grinned. I didn't realize you were the other person bidding for them.
But if you had, you'd not have fought any less tenaciously.
Card shrugged.
If you weren't in the business of hauling things for the rebellion, I might have had a chance to test what I learned against you again. And my girl would have made you pay even more in your next meeting.
Booster Terek rested his big hands on Mirax's shoulders. Mirax accepted a goblet of pale green Alderaanian wine from Card, then raised her glass with the others as Card offered a toast.
May the bargaining be as sweet as the profit, and the next deal not long in coming.
As they sipped, he mused,
this particular year was very good, but the wine laid down a year of Alderaan's demise was supposed to be even better.
Booster cleared his throat.
It's amazing what you know, Card. Does your encyclopedic knowledge include where I can get some supplies I need?
Card's eyes narrowed slightly.
You need, or Wedge and Phillies need? They're things that are needed, Card.
Booster brought his hands together.
Let's trim some parsecs off the course of this conversation, shall we? What I'm looking for is missile and torpedo sensor packages, launch tube assemblies, and a supply of proton torpedoes and concussion missiles.
They negotiated for quite a while, with Mirax taking an active role, and finally they came to an agreement, whereby the materials would be traded for Bacta.
And we'll be transporting the Bacta to our final destination ourselves, Booster added.
Card leaned back in his chair.
Not that you don't trust me.
Mirax raised an eyebrow. The fact that either one of you would sell the other for a bucket of warm dewback drool isn't really your name here. Betting against Wedge Antilles lost Iceheart the Imperial homeworld and sent her packing for Tyvera. Talon, you're too smart not to back Wedge, especially since his victory will break the cartel and open up the Bacta trade. A little gratitude toward you from the Asheran rebels won't hurt when distribution is set up.
Point taken.
Card picked up the datapad on his desk and punched a few keys.
I'm going to have you liaise with Melina Karnes on the delivery details.
Booster frowned.
Karnes? I don't know her.
She worked for Jabba on Tatooine. Good head on our shoulders. She understands the business, but is a bit shy on experience. Card waved toward the doorway.
Here she is. Come in, Melina.
Melina's short, dark hair accentuated a scar that began near the corner of her right eye and shot back beyond her ear. She was pretty, with dark eyes and a full mouth. Card explained.
Melina, you'll coordinate shipments of material to Booster. The cargo and delivery points will be hazardous, but we'll not charge him our normal rate. Now, let us attend to the details that make sure we all profit.
Coming back from a raid, Corrin felt so tired that he knew he should just turn in, but the idea of hitting the small suite of rooms he shared with Mirax didn't appeal. On his approach back to the Yagdul station, he'd gotten a message she'd recorded saying she was taking her father out on another trip to finalize arrangements with Card. She expected to be gone for 3 days. The 4th anniversary of Corrin's father's death had snuck up and ambushed him.
A lot of hydrogen had been melted into helium and a lot of stars since then, but the memory of holding his father's dead body in his arms had the immediacy of an event that had occurred moments before. The man's stillness, the stink of blood and blaster-burned flesh, the screams of those in the cantina, including his own, all pounded in on him. The previous year, things had not seemed so bad. But he just started with Rogue Squadron at that time, so he had a legion of distractions to dull the pain. He also realized that his liaison with Mirak, and then meeting her father, made it tougher on him. Though he loved her and wouldn't give her up for anything, Corin couldn't help feeling that his father would have felt betrayed by his love for Mirak. On top of that, the next step in the evolution of the Bacta War was pushing him to the limit. Wedge had teams, from full squadrons down to single two-ship flights, out harassing the Bacta cartel. The whole strategy was to hit and run, which worked exceedingly well. Because the Typhoran scheduled their Bacta shipments in advance, it was possible for the rogues to show up, force the Star Destroyers to scramble their fighter, pop off some proton torpedoes to take out a few ties, then scatter. He knew the strategy had to be frustrating for Isart's people, since they were taking losses without killing any of the rogues. But it wasn't much better for Corin or the rest of Wedge's people. Realizing he had no desire to be alone, he headed for the tapcast known as Flare Star. Fleury Voru nodded as graciously as he could manage to Isa.
I have information you will find useful. As you know, our main problem in dealing with Antilles is that the rogues are striking at us and running quickly. We arrive, they launch proton torpedoes or concussion missiles, then they scatter like shrapnel. I have yet to find out the location of Antilles' base. Until I do, I have uncovered two important pieces of information. Where they are getting their munition, and more to the point, where the next shipment will be handed over to the Antilles group.
Really?
It is true, Madam Director. A woman in Talon Card's employ is working with us. Malina Canis informs me that Booster Terek placed a huge order for munitions and equipment, which Card is meeting in installment. Card's people are shipping the supplies to a rendezvous point. Then Terek is taking them back to Antilles headquarters. They will be making the transfer in the Alderaan system. If we divert our warships to Alderaan, we can ambush the Antilles group and destroy them.
Arsad's eyes narrowed. I'm not going to send all my ships. This information may be false. However, I will send Convarian and the Corruptor. He's ambushed them once and can do it again.
Voru shook his head. But if you only send the Corruptor, Antilles and his people will scatter as usual.
No, Voru. We will accomplish everything. While you have woven a net of spies to catch Antilles, I have been searching for the means to kill him. I have found it. And in 12 hours it will be here, and ready to join Convarian as he goes for the kill.
Voru frowned.
I don't understand.
It is simple, Minister Voru. At great expense, I have leased from High Admiral Caradoc a ship, the Aggregator.
Voru's jaw dropped. An interdictor cruiser.
Exactly.
She clapped her hands together.
When it arrives at Alderaan and powers up its gravity well projectors, Antilles and his ships will be trapped.